We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
My name is Jari Bolander. Welcome to the Entrepreneur Ethos Podcast. On this podcast, we're going to take a deep dive into the traits, values, beliefs, and skills of all sorts of entrepreneurs to learn how to build a more ethical, inclusive, and resilient world. Let's get started. Hey everyone, I wanted to jump in quickly and let you know about the release of the audio version of my book, The Entrepreneur Ethos, narrated by David A. Knesser. If you want to support the show, you can buy it wherever audiobooks are sold. Links are also in the show notes. Now, on to my guest for today, Ash Sintas, founder of CityShop. Ash started her journey as an entrepreneur in her 20s, when she had an idea for a fabric that didn't exist, one that was odor-resistant but also eco-friendly. From there, she went on to work at various startups and most recently founded CityShop. CityShop is an e-commerce platform to showcase local businesses. Right now, it features local businesses from Portland, Oregon. But soon, we'll be showcasing local businesses in Los Angeles, New York, and many more. Ash wanted to find a way to make local shopping more convenient and more easily marketed online to provide small businesses and their customers an alternative to Amazon. She built her business by using her contacts, but also by researching and reaching out to potential partners. Ash stresses she learned the vital importance of creating and relying on your team, as well as talking out her ideas with others. Now, let's get better together. Ash Sintas, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Well, I'm super fascinated by what you're doing over at CityShop because I see this as a huge need and a huge potential for doing good in the world. And I always love it when people do good in the world. And it was actually pretty cool that I think you're like the second person that I've interviewed from matchmaker.fm, which is this service that I signed up for. And so far, everyone's been awesome. So I'm pretty sure you're going to be awesome too, because I did take a look at some of the stuff that you're doing and I really find it fascinating. But before we get into CityShop, why don't you give us a little background on how you got to do what you're doing today?
Yeah. So I guess I'll go back to kind of one of the reasons why I thought about CityShop was my own small business experience. So when I was in college, I thought of a product that I wanted to invent. So the moment I graduated, I started pursuing that. And what ended up being a product that I went through the patent process and, you know, patterns and making it. I ended up inventing a textile, actually. And so this was back, I would say, you know, maybe 10 years ago, before there was a real big, you know, push towards sustainable fabrics. Yeah. And so when I was inventing this product, I really wanted the properties of the product to be eco-friendly, that the properties of the eco-friendly lasted through washing, which a lot of times it doesn't, be antimicrobial, which is more than antibacterial, and be odor and stain resistant. And so when I started looking for this fabric, I realized it didn't exist. You know, a lot of people think, oh, well, there's dry fit that's odor resistant. And I'm like, well, it's not eco-friendly and that doesn't last once you wash and dry it, you know, a few times. So I went through that whole process, developed this, you know, fabric and this product for 2 years and kind of went through the troubles that everyone goes through when trying to start a business and get a product out there and engage an audience. And had some decent success, but a lot of hardship. And then really ended up realized that the true value of the product was the fabric itself and not the product I invented, which was for the yoga industry. And went all over the country meeting with a lot of, you know, huge Fortune 500 companies that they wanted to license the material. And, you know, went through all of that, but learned how important, you know, I was in my early 20s. So I learned how important it is to have a team and have a plan and not try and do everything yourself. So I was a part of other startups for a few years and helping them grow nationally. And then I was just walking around the streets a couple of years ago and really started paying attention to how amazing unique brick and mortars there are everywhere. Oh, yeah. Like I've lived across the country and I've always noticed, but it wasn't until when I moved to Portland, Oregon, that I realized, wow, there's some awesome shops here. I think that, you know, the world needs to know about them. And how do I get my friends from North Carolina and Michigan to shop on these shops and not just go to a big box retailer? And that's kind of when I started putting this together of the two-part problem of, one, these amazing brick and mortars aren't getting discovered, even in their own local community. You know, if you don't kind of leave your neighborhood, you're not really stumbling upon, you know, this great, you know, home goods store or apparel store. And also, why aren't they able to get more regional or national success? And then thinking back on my own troubles of being a small business owner was that there aren't a lot of support and resources for small businesses to be able to expand because normally they don't have the financing, they don't have the team, or they don't have the know-how.
Oh yeah. So, I mean, even locally it's hard.
Yeah, it's so hard. And especially nowadays because there's so much, you know, noise out there and you know, it's all pay to play. So that's kind of how I came up with City Shop. Yeah.
I mean even some of the platforms, so you know, like Uber Eats, DoorDash, I mean, all the food delivery ones where they're like, oh yeah, we'll come in and help you. You know, it's like, well, but you take a pretty hefty cut.
Crazy cut.
Yeah. And how is that really fostering the local environment? So no, I get what you mean. I mean, here in San Francisco, it's the same thing, right? I walk down the street. I'm like, what a cool shop. But yeah. Resources aren't there to promote in some cases.
Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, and the reality is that anything that we buy from a big box retailer or buy from Amazon, we can find within a 10-mile radius of our home most of the time. It's just not convenient. And especially with kind of how the world is with social distancing restrictions and businesses not being to be open. And also they're not really being a platform where they're still all-in-one shopping, which is why a lot of marketplaces like Amazon kind of own the market, is that you can get everything from one site versus, you know, searching on Google. But, you know, City Shop is positioning itself in that way to help out with that.
Yeah, I think what intrigues me about City Shop is the same thing that intrigues me about a company called Dumpling. And I interviewed Nate, the CEO of Dumpling, and basically its whole thing is, well, the gig economy, right, doesn't really benefit the workers, as much as it benefits the platform.
Yes.
And so their philosophy was, well, why don't we make it super easy for a person that likes to deliver groceries or a personal shopper to actually start their own business and have that customer relationship? Because the customer relationship is the most important thing, like, as you know, for small businesses as well. Their approach was really great because they're like, no, we're going to set you up with your own business. We're just going to give you the platform so that you could actually compete against an Instacart or a DoorDash or whatever. And I feel that what you're doing with City Shop is exactly that. It's this whole idea, and I've been thinking about this for a long time, this whole retail 3.0 idea where it's on demand, on premise, online, and it's the customer experience that matters way more than anything else. Because I, you know, guilty as charged, I shop on Amazon a lot because it's just convenient. There's some things I need, it's convenient. But honestly, there's some things that I would love to buy local if it was more convenient and I could find it. Like, I can't find it, you know, and I think that's what's really super compelling about this. So what's the difference between like City Shop and say Etsy?
Yeah, that's a great question. So kind of something exactly what I went through with my own business is that there is no platform really for that small, medium business that is more than just a part-time job. And Etsy is a great platform. I've sold on it in the past too with some other side projects, but it's definitely a arts and crafts, small run, handmade each and every time type of platform. Right. And then you have Amazon, which is just, you get lost. It's all big box retailers. So if you're a small business and you have this great store, this great brick and mortar, or you just sell online, you're too legit for Etsy, but then you're just too small for Amazon. And so we're really this middle of the ground, platform that can just cater to that, SMB that can do a production run if they were to get, more national sales, but do it in a way where it's either localized or even, found by the product or the brand values.
Interesting. Yeah, no, I see your point on that. That's actually a really good way to think about it. Because, I mean, there are other platforms, like Shopify is one that I'm familiar with, where you can put your stuff on Shopify and, there's a certain amount of technical prowess and a certain amount of other things. How is City Shop different than, say, a Shopify integration on a website?
So with Shopify, Shopify is another great resource as well, but it's still not helping a small business get found within their local community, get found in their regionally or even nationally or globally. And I think what's kind of interesting is there's such a push to have a website and to market on Instagram and Facebook, but it's not bringing in the sales that everyone thinks. I think that it's,
this firsthand, so I'm with you.
Yeah. I mean, and I think if we all talked about it a little bit more and we're, humble enough to say, like, I'm really not getting as much as I really thought I would, then the conversation, I think, could change that. Look, there's over 800 million websites. You're competing against 800 million. There's only 57 marketplaces. And none of them are focused on local shopping. So, your ability to get discovered is greater on that versus, a website, just having your own landing page.
I mean, true enough. I mean, for a living, I do this PR and marketing gig, and we constantly struggle with clients about how much to spend on ads and are they really effective and what's your metric and ROAS and all this like gobbledygook junk stuff that you can never really truly get a handle on. Although there's data's nice, but I think it's like step functions, right? Like unless you have $1,000 a week to spend on ads, probably not going to be good for you. And as a small business, you're like $4,000 on ads. what do I invest in? And I think this is why this is so compelling for small businesses and those that are, if you're a small business, if you're listening to this, if you're an entrepreneur that's runs, you know, the exact kind of shop that City Shop will cater to, you need to have a way for people to buy your stuff online. Full stop. Don't be all like, oh, I'm not into that. You have to have it.
Yeah.
Especially like look at now during COVID. Like we're still in during COVID. The massive switch to, oh, I can't go to a store. Well, I still want to buy something. What do? You need to cater to that customer, just like every single restaurant, at least in San Francisco, had to, or they're going to die. Because you can't, you have to meet customers where they are. Like you have to give them the convenience. That doesn't mean that you're going to have all these, you know, massive amount of online sales. But boy, if the barrier's low and the platform's good and it's reasonably priced, and of course there's synergy and you guys are all, you know, kumbaya and everything. What a great idea.
Yeah. Yeah, no, exactly. I mean, and it's when we're talking to small business owners or we're talking with organizations that support their local community. We say that. We say, you know what? Restaurants have it. Gyms have ClassPass,
yeah.
You know, all of these other platforms, but the bread and butter of a city is shopping. It's retail. And so how do we help transition them in a way that is still supportive, still helps them on their margins, makes it easy because so many of them have had to furlough half of their team. So they don't have the, you know, the time or the resources. And also from, you know, an awareness standpoint, really start converting that shopper digitally and yet still holding on to the mission of wanting to support local and wanting to support small businesses.
Yeah. That's a good point. I mean, you know, like coffee shops, especially roasters, you know, which, you know, I have a friend, Phil, not the Phil I interviewed, we talked about before. He owns a company called Sunset Roasters out here in San Francisco. And, you know, great coffee. You know, he's got subscriptions and website and everything and doesn't have a retail store yet, but I could see, you know, he does a pretty brisk business like at farmers markets and stuff. And his biggest problem is discovery, right? Like, oh, if you really want Phil's coffee, and not Phil's coffee, the pour over, but Phil, you know, Sunset Roasters Phil, hard to find unless you're local, right? And I know there is a lot of other, like, as an example, I use coffee because I'm addicted to coffee. And I just, like, love coffee. And so it's just so interesting how when you look at artisans, and I think small business in the community, they're artisans to a certain degree, right? If you know kind of the local flavor of your community and you provide a service, you know, you're catering to the need. You don't want to go global, but you also want to, again, meet them where they are. And especially when disruption happens, right? I think that's the most important thing is you just can't now just rely on walk-in traffic. You have to have a full-on strategy for when things are going to go south.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And, you know, I think with travel restrictions and also everyone with travel restrictions, I think people still want to be able to experience a city in way. And that's something that we try and do on our website that looks quite different than other marketplaces is you can still experience the authenticness and the personality of a city, even if you can't go there.
Yeah.
But also, you know, we're all transplants and, you know, I've lived in LA and as I said, I'm from Michigan, North Carolina, and I would love to just be able to support my community there, you know, and do it in a way without having to go there. And so I think, you know, us also realizing, well, what does local small business mean? Yes, it means within our own community, but it also means that local can also be a feeling and also be a way of pride to support majority of local, you know, communities, wherever you're from or that you love or you went to college, you know, in.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. I didn't think of it that way. Like support local, not only where you live, but where you're from.
Yeah. I mean, people do it with sports teams.
Well, that is 100% true. Like, you know, like, yeah, you are 100% right on that one. People are like obsessive about that stuff. to the point where, you know, it borders on lunacy at times.
Yeah.
So how, I mean, you came up with the idea of City Shop. Do you have co-founders that you've kind of pulled together and to build it up? I mean, do you have a technical background? I mean, kind of how...
Yeah,
I've been
really, really fortunate in the sense that I've been able to meet a lot of great people, and there's a team of 11 of us on City Shop.
Wow.
And I think, you know, there's a few, you know, COVID's been horrific and a really, you know, hard time for the world, but there are a few silver linings. And I think one of the silver linings is that people have been able to kind of reexamine, you know, their life and what they're doing for work. And some people have also been, their workload has dropped 30 or 40%. So it's given them an opportunity to maybe start a passion project or be a part of something that they believe in. So I've been able to, you know, bring on a team of 11 that we're all basically co-founders and doing this because we love the mission of it.
Yeah.
And so we have, you know, engineering team, I have a marketing team, a sales team, an e-commerce team, and we're building it together, and it's been really amazing.
Oh, that's great. And so did you meet all these co-founders online, or are they people you've worked with before, or how yeah. I'm always fascinated by how people get together around a common goal or a common company. 'Cause it's, you know, people say it's like founder dating or co-founder dating, which to a certain degree it is. But there's also a little bit more to it. And so I'm always curious how people approach it and kind of how it happens.
Yeah. So a few of them have been former coworkers or have been introed to me from former coworkers. And then a handful I cold outreached on LinkedIn. You know, I looked around and I was like, what type of, you know, resource and personality and person do I need that would add a lot of value to City Shop? And so months and months of just like really putting together, I think, a team that I thought would really work well, and just reached out on LinkedIn and just said, hey, this is what I have going on. I'd love to chat.
Okay.
So it's an old school cold outreach.
Yeah, no. Well, so I get pitched all the time on LinkedIn. I don't know if you do, through the little messaging thing.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know why I'm a sucker for like, oh, let's connect. We know some people and, you know, whatever. Then I hit, you know, okay, cool. And then all of a sudden I get this, like, it seems to me like a 25 billion page intro, you know, which I just immediately go unfollow or unconnect. 'Cause like, don't immediately try to sell me something. Don't immediately, like, you know, be in my face about like, let's get to know each other. I mean, I understand that it's got to work because they keep doing it, but boy, I hate that.
Yeah. I mean, I think kind of like it's a sales strategy in the sense that try something a few ways. If you're not getting the result, then reword it. And with my first company, I was able to, you know, sit in boardrooms with president of Ford Motors and Bed Bath & Beyond, and just from cold emails.
Yeah.
And so I learned a lot and practiced a lot. Okay, what is that? It's true. People don't read a whole essay that you send them. What like two liners can you do to at least spark their interest, that then you can at least get the phone call and then share your essay?
Yeah. No, I agree. So is that your technique? What's your secret? Can you tell me your secret to cold yeah, LinkedIn, I mean, connected message? Because a lot. So everyone, listen to this part, especially if you want to connect with me, because I'm going to trust that Ash is going to tell us good stuff. So go ahead.
Well, it depends on if it's someone to bring onto the team or an advisory, or trying to work together with a partnership. But normally I definitely do my research. So if they love to support women-owned businesses, I mention that. If they've started a business that's mission-driven, I try and mention that. I compliment them in some way with the previous work that they've done, which shows that you've also done your research. So it's a good way of doing that. And then I'll try and do like a one-liner of, we're really just trying to help out small businesses or trying to change the way people shop. I'd love to tell you more. and kind of just throw in what our overall mission is and make it in a way that they could relate to. So, as I said, like if it's someone who loves to support women owned businesses, I'll say I'm a woman tech founder. COVID's been really hard on small businesses and we have a great idea to help them, survive and be a stable business. I'd love to tell you more and just kind of leave them hanging with that. So I would say research, connect, and then a quick one-liner of how that your business connects with what they're passionate about.
Cool. No, I like it. Those are the ones that work on me.
Yeah,
for sure. I mean, when we got connected on matchmaker.fm, I think yours was a little longer than that, but mm-hmm. Since you're trying to they're already the, it's sort of like I already said, hey, I'm looking for people to be on the podcast. And so anyway, it's a little bit different, but that's interesting. So how do you roll this thing out? Is it city by city? Is it region? I mean, how do you determine like what city to focus on and how many do you have and kind of what's the strategy on like making this thing go nationwide, I'm assuming?
Yeah. Yep. Nationwide. Yeah. So, in the beginning, I did a huge market survey. So I reached out to hundreds of businesses in four different parts of North America, just so I could make sure from a regional aspect that it was, I could cover my bases. So we reached out to New York, Austin, Chicago, and Portland. And Portland, because we're headquartered here. And Portland's a very maker city. Mm-hmm. So we reached out to all these businesses first to see if this is something that they would value and find, something that they would want to be a part of. And so we did that in the beginning, 9 months ago, basically, and then didn't launch the site until just 3 weeks ago. Wow. And we launched just in Portland first. Mm-hmm. We had the majority of our people who signed up to be a part of this first launch from Portland. And of course, wanted to test the site, make sure that all the buttons work, the functionality is there. And our strategy of launching into other cities is partnering with a lot of the organizations that want to help small businesses. So there's B Corp in every single city. There's an SBA in every single city. There's a lot of organizations from like women-owned small businesses. So we're partnering with them really to provide this service for their members. And then we have an ambassador program, which is we're just really launching right now and seems to be working really well because so many people are passionate about their community and they're passionate about supporting their businesses of their community. And so the word of mouth has been awesome as well. So our strategy is we launch into each city once we have about 25 to 50 vendors, depending on the product mix online. So we're launching into two more cities by the end of this month.
Wow. And the product mix, it's not restaurants or anything. It's mostly like product based type small businesses.
Yeah. So all retail based businesses.
All retail. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, this sounds like something San Francisco needs in a big way.
Yeah.
I'm part of this economic recovery task force here, and we talk a lot about small business and trying to foster, foster just them surviving, but then also what are some strategies to, make them stronger. And of course the focus is mostly on restaurants, and tourism because we're a big tourist town. But you can also see the small businesses, what's unique about San Francisco and all its little neighborhoods struggling as well. So I could definitely see this sort of thing, being pretty, pretty big here. Did you guys look at San Francisco or are we just too wacky?
No, we've looked at San Francisco and we have a few shops from SF that have signed on. We're going to spread out a little bit more and then go into Tech City. So
Yeah. No, it's wise choice. Mm-hmm. Wise choice. I mean, of course, starting at your home base is probably important as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
So are there any other like marketplaces like this? I know we mentioned Etsy, of course, that's more, part-timey type stuff. Of course there's Shopify, which people can kind of brew their own, but it's not really a marketplace. Any kind of things that are similar, maybe in a different industry that we could kind of going to grab
onto? There's a few sites that really focus on the apparel aspect of small businesses, which is great. They've been around for a while. They don't try and own the local aspect or the city aspect. They really just try and say, here are some boutiques from around the country or around the world that you can shop at, and which is great. But really our position is that anything that you want to buy, regardless if it's shoes, home goods, you know, apparel, or even, you know, some sauces or jewelry, you can find that from a local business. So we're really just trying to be more of like a Thrive Markets or a marketplace that features everything and not just a specific category.
Right. Okay. Other than, of course, like restaurants, although you mentioned sauces, so stuff that's probably shippable. It's like, yeah, you're not going to get the local pad thai shipped to you. I mean, maybe one day, maybe people just like freeze it or something.
But it's funny, like quite a few of our purchases have been with people really wanting to try like this great curry sauce from this New York small business. Yeah. And, so it's funny with like the food part, a lot of people like the uniqueness of a more small batched local business.
Yeah. Cause you know, out here in San Francisco, it's crab season soon, basically. Well, not soon, in another month or so. And of course, you know, we're known for crabs among other things in sourdough. Probably doesn't ship very well. So City Shop, it's, you know, each individual kind of city or metro area to sort of get momentum, and then, you know, kind of like step and repeat, for lack of a better word. You talked about this ambassador program, and I'm really curious about this because I've been looking into this kind of thing, how to really go from like a prospect, someone that may want to do business with you, to a customer, building that relationship, and then having that customer become an advocate. What are some of the things that you guys are doing along the lines of an ambassador program? Kind of how does that work with something like this?
Yeah. Well, we're just starting to really put it together. So I think we'll definitely have quite a bit of, different variations to see what works. Mm-hmm. But what we're really just trying to do is, you know, at the end of the day, the mission is you just need to start local. Before you decide to go buy on Amazon, or before you decide to go buy Best Buy or Target or whatever big box retailer, first, let's just see if you can find it locally and find it from a small business. And so because a lot of consumers are passionate about that, we're really just trying to work with our ambassadors on how we can share that message. And not necessarily starting them to bring on vendors. That's like our second phase of it, but it's really, hey, we're going into the holiday season. What type of, collateral can we create? What type of social media sharing program can we create that just gets that message out there? And then ideally it will bring back into what, you know, City Shop is all about. So really working with them on, we have a part of the site we're going to launch that is this social sharing aspect of pride within your own city that these ambassadors will get to be able to start building upon, and they'll be able to share their own content. So it's really just this sharing of the message and the mission, and then giving them kind of an incentive base for being able to do that. So whether it's, you know, earning rewards on City Shop, becoming a tiered certain ambassador within City Shop because we're calling them the city voices, so the voice of their community, and just building the pride around that is how we're starting it off.
Okay. Yeah, no, I mean, this whole advocate, ambassador, you know, super fan or whatever you want to call it is something that more and more people are trying to figure out. It seems like every newsletter, every company I do business with has got it. Oh, be an ambassador. And you're like, really?
Yeah.
I don't know if I want to, I got enough going on. Like, I really want to be an ambassador to, you know, whatever. But I think what's really interesting about being like a city ambassador, which just such a good, nice, novel kind of concept. Because the reason why I bring this up is like, if you have pride in your city, like everyone, you know, everyone does, like, hey, I live here, I should take pride in it. Like, the advocacy for a city in the shop local is broader than just like one brand, right? Oh, I'm an advocate for like The Hustle or Trends, which is this great newsletter that you should read, by the way, or subscribe to. They've got a lot of great, great stuff that you could probably use. But yeah, I mean, I could see that being a lot more powerful than just for a single brand, right? So, you know, if you're the Portland ambassador or the Portland voice of Portland, I mean, it sounds a little like, oh, who are you to say that you're the voice of Portland? But you know what I mean? You could benefit a lot more people. And I think it just amplifies your time more. Like, you know, instead of being like, oh, you know, I like this, you know, mud water stuff, or I like, you know, liquid death water, or I like, you know, Sunset Roaster coffee. It's like, no, I like everything from San Francisco, and, you know, and I get, are these ambassadors just going to be vendors? Or are they also going to be customers?
They're either or. I mean, really, it's like we're positioning City Voice to just be anybody who is passionate about local shopping. They're passionate about their small businesses. Maybe they are a vendor who also sits on, you know, other committees or in the past, you know, but we'll go back to normal one day. But
oh,
like,
yeah.
Hosted events, you know, hosted talks or, you know, or maybe it is, you know, the, you know, young person who loves to shop and they just know about all the cool new, like, hidden brick and mortars, or they know the next brick and mortar that's opening up. And so, you know, it really can just be anybody, but around the mission of our city. Like I was talking to someone the other day and they mentioned how Cincinnati is, you know, exploding with all of these really cool maker brick and mortars and all these small businesses. And I'm like, oh, I would have never known. And this person was so proud of Cincinnati for getting there.
I mean, Toledo, same thing. I had a friend that moved to Toledo just because it was the new cool, hip, progressive thing to do.
Yeah. So I think positioning in that way is really gonna, you know, be helpful for us and be helpful for the communities. Because at the end of the day, we don't want to take that away. We want to be able to. People love shopping local because they love knowing who they're buying from, how it was made. They love that. They love it being more than just transactional, which is a lot of big box retailers have made this just like one click buy. You know, let's just, who cares about this? The history of this product. And we're trying to really make it where you can still have that community connection with the shop or with other people who love to support the shop as well, and not just make it, you know, this transactional experience. So I think there'll be a huge help in that.
No, I agree. I really agree. I think the future of retail is going to be wrapped around the customer's experience.
Yes.
And price is going to be important for some things, but as things commoditize, you have to be different. And my guess is that some people will pay for the better experience, the better, you know, artisan type experience where they know the shop owner. I mean, I go to a local coffee shop. If I know the people, that's great. Like my friend Phil, right?
Like
I buy Phil's beans to use on my espresso machine because I know Phil. I've helped him roast coffee. You know, the experience to me is, you know, I guess maybe I'm a little older than you are. So I now value experiences more. And I don't know. I think maybe a lot of generations are now starting to do that, but
And I think they're like, as you know, as you're saying, as a lot more products are commoditized and you have kind of big box retailers still focusing on the cheapest product. You know, I think a lot of people right now are valuing the values and the social responsibility of the brand a little bit more than just price. And so, and I think, you know, a misconception that a lot of people have is that local is more expensive than say a big box retailer, but really it's only maybe if anything, a few dollars more. And the dollar that you're spending local is going more into your community than a big box retailer, than buying on Amazon. Mm-hmm. You know, that if you put a dollar into your community, I think it's like the statistics are, you know, 60 cents to the dollar is going to public schools, is going to transit, your roads.
It's actually, there's that, but then there's also the ripple effect of it. It's not a vicious cycle. It's a growth cycle. So that dollar will circulate, and if it's just done locally, and I don't remember the exact statistics, but it's somewhere between 3 times to 6 times it gets reused. So economic activity locally is way bigger. And then if you've got more local economic activity, you've got more stability, you've got more better thriving. People are like, you know, can work and stuff. So it's really important. I mean, that's the reason why, like, the dumpling thing. So, you know, if you're a gig worker and you do stuff for Instagram or DoorDash or whatever, those dollars aren't going locally. I mean, you get paid, which is great. And if that's what you got to do, it's what you got to do. But the platforms are what benefit from the customer loyalty, the customer interaction. And I know some of these, like these gig workers. And if you talk to Nate, the CEO of Dumpling, you'll understand that it's not beneficial for the gig worker. I mean, they get money, but that's it. They don't get like the relationship or a business or stability. Because, you know, if you use some of these things, it's just like they ding you. Hey, are you doing this? Are you on time? Like, you don't really have your own time. When you're on the clock, you're on the clock. And that's the reason why a lot of these companies are starting to get dinged for the difference between a contractor and an employee. You know, here in California, they're just going through this whole rigmarole about it. And, you know, Uber threatened and Lyft threatened to get out and all. And you're just like, okay, you know, I get it. But like, ultimately, what I think you guys are trying to do and what Dumpling's trying to do is the right thing in terms of an entrepreneur ethos, community, building resiliency, having like the means for a community to sustain itself. It's important. It's actually more important than the convenience and the cost difference in the long run to a big box Amazon. And again, don't get me wrong. I love Amazon. I buy stuff on Amazon all the time. And I'm trying, you know, of course, to wean myself off of that because I got to try to live the way I want others to live, or at least demonstrate that. But look, it's a balance. You know, if you can't afford it, you can't afford it. Yeah, that's a tough thing too. If you can't go to the local coffee shop for the $6 latte or whatever they cost now that I make all my coffee at home, you know, no offense to some folks, but so are there any, sounds like you're going to be pretty busy the next, for this foreseeable future. Are there any things you do in your daily habit or routine to kind of help you manage this, what I hope is going to be meteoric growth?
I'm pretty regimented, and I try and stick with that as much as possible. And I do allow time to, also understand kind of what's going on too, and staying up to date with everything. And so I lean on my team a lot, which is great. I mean, I cannot emphasize how important a team is. And I know that saying that is, you would think everyone would know that, but when I was a young entrepreneur, and if anyone listening is a young entrepreneur, you don't realize how important that team is and making sure that everyone is supporting each other throughout this startup journey. Not just everything weighing on you.
It's hard for young entrepreneurs. Some of the ones I mentor have this, I have to do it all. Oh my gosh, what happens if I don't like get on this email or whatever? And I always tell them, the world will still turn if you don't get back to this email. Yes. And more importantly, you will like live a little longer because you're not going to have a heart attack, you know?
Yes. Be patient. I think other things that I do is, I have my regimen. I reflect a lot. And I communicate a lot, you know. Even that was something I didn't do when I was a younger entrepreneur, is I kept a lot of thoughts internal. And talking about them, I know the fear is, the fear of rejection, or someone's going to make fun of you, or they're going to think it's a dumb idea, or they're not going to get it. Mm-hmm. And anytime I've learned that anytime I talk to my team or I talk to a family member, or I just talk to my local barista. Someone has a thought that it will help you pivot if you need to pivot, or it'll help you think about the consumer journey of your product. So I think also I really try and do make a conscious effort to talk and communicate about anything that's going on in my head about, you know, oh my gosh, we're not getting as much traction as we need, or we need to sign up more vendors, or maybe we should be doing this, and kind of, you know, work out that process.
Yeah. I mean, communication is super important. The art of communication, I think, is something that all of us can do better. Those conversations are super hard to have. And you know, what's always also interesting is that younger entrepreneurs and even older ones think that they've got to do a lot as opposed to lead a lot. You know, I had a professor in business school who said, as a boss and a leader, half the time you should be sitting around waiting for some crisis to happen. And and I'm like, really? Like, really? So, oh yeah. Cause you, if you pack your day filled with work and meetings, what happens if something goes wrong and you need to jump on something? And he also said, you have to be available for your team and essentially drop everything when there's a crisis, because as the leader, entrepreneur, business person, whatever, whoever you want to say, when a crisis occurs, you as the leader are in charge of managing the crisis.
Yeah.
It's ultimately up to you. And the quicker you can get a handle on it and the quicker you can calm the team down, the better the world is going to be. I mean, it's the same thing with PR. Like I tell people all the time, you know, the cliche is the cover up is worse than the event. It's 100% true. It's 100% true in so many different ways that as time goes on, the more you cover it up, the worse things will get. But the other thing that people don't understand is that once you do tell the truth and once you do like explain the situation, they never take it to the next level. What I mean by next level is what's the bigger picture of this scenario?
Yeah.
You know, like, hey, we screwed up. Okay, now what? I mean, there's a great example of this locally in my community. There's this nonprofit called Project Level. And Danielle, who's their co-executive director with her husband, Big Rich, who used to be a rapper here in the Fillmore. Danielle took a bunch of their kids to Forever 21 to get clothes for a photo shoot. And they go there all the time, right? This particular case, they were profiled because they're African American. And the cops came and they checked their bag, and it was a whole like really disrespectful and so like it was awful. And you know, Danielle is such a sweet person, and just like she could have, and Rich, and they, to their credit, they could have taken this in the way, this was like a year ago, right? They could have taken this the way bad way. I mean, in my opinion, the bad way, and not in that they didn't have every right to be super pissed off. But what they chose to do was take it to the next level. And what I mean by that is instead of, you know, going the normal route and the protests and everything, which there were a little bit, they actually worked with Forever 21 and said, well, what's the real big issue here? We need to take this up a notch. We need to figure out systematically what's going on. And it turns out what they ended up doing is collaborating on a fashion line. They collaborated on all these great things to really show the positive that could come out of a negative. It's next level thinking, right? Because a lot of people do that. And now, I mean, they sold the line out. They had this tour. I mean, it's, you know, it's out of something that could have been, it was horrible. Bad thing came into something beautiful because they had, you know, they said, hey, How are we going to be role models for our kids? But more importantly, how can we make this better? Yeah. And so now they are fundamentally changing the policies at Forever 21. And they're showing the beautiful creativity of all the Project Level kids that designed this awesome clothing line, right? Yeah, so it's like,
awesome. Yeah,
you know, so anyway.
No, that's great.
Just a little example of
that
communication part. Wow. Well, Ash, I mean, it's been great talking to you. I really appreciate your time.
Awesome. Thank you so much. It's been awesome. I really appreciate getting to know you more, and and having this opportunity.
Yeah. And good luck with City Shop. Make sure you keep in touch and so we can metaphorically blow it up.
Right.
'Cause I think it's a great idea. More people should be doing this. And I think it really does, in my opinion, champion the idea of this entrepreneur ethos on how to build a more ethical, inclusive, and resilient community, because our local small businesses are part of our community. They need to be supported, and they are the fabric that keeps our community resilient.
Yes.
Because they care just as much as we care. So thanks again.
Yeah. No, awesome. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to the Entrepreneur Ethos podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did creating it. My hope is that you learned something that can make you a little bit better. If you enjoyed the podcast, please do share it with friends and review it on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can also join my email list by visiting theentrepreneurethos.com to get my thoughts on what I'm doing to get better, as well as what I'm working on. You can also pick up my book, The Entrepreneur Ethos, if you want to learn the traits, values, and beliefs that I think we need to build a more ethical, inclusive, and resilient entrepreneur and, frankly, world community. Feel free to follow me on Twitter at The Daily MBA and let me know if you have any questions or recommendations for a guest you'd like me to talk to. Also, drop me a note if you try anything we talked about on this or any other episode. I'd love to hear what's working for you. Until next time, keep getting better.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.